Well, welcome to episode 293, and I'm your host, Jerry Gibson. It's fantastic to have back on former world number three English legend, Simon Park. He was on the podcast a couple of years back, and it's been far too long. I'm not sure if it's been two, maybe it was last year, but really looking forward to catching up with Simon. He's one of my favorite players back in the day. I think back when Jancher came onto the scene, and then Peter Nichol, Jonathan Power, he was part of that generation of player. One of the best to play the game, always fun to watch play. He had an attacking style of play, had a unique style of play. If you get the chance to check out any of his old matches, I think they might be up on Squash TV in the library there, but also on YouTube. Anyways, we're going to talk about the event that he was commentating on in Cleveland several weeks back there, the Squash in the Land event, I believe, and a couple of epic performances from Nor El Tayeb and Leonel Cardenas, who both wound up winning that event. We're also going to get into some other topics, including the Farag Cole final at Optasia, officiating directives, in particular officiating attempting to silence players a bit in terms of their banter with officials. And we're going to get into much, much more, hopefully, as well. But before that, I'm always very excited to talk about the great sponsor on this podcast, Open Squash, whose mission it is to grow the game and to make it more accessible and more affordable for everyone. Open Squash sponsors the very best in the game, including Gina Kennedy, Victor Quinn, Hannah Craig, who's also part of the Open Squash team of elite coaches in the New York City area, and world number one on the men's scene, Ali Farag. Now, Ali and also his former head coach at Harvard, Mike Way, have taken on senior advisor roles at Open Squash. So you can check out the website and see what initiatives they have going on there. I'm sure they'll have some updates on the page at some point. And in terms of summer, they always have some great summer squash camps, so you want to definitely look into those by checking out the website. The camps will be headed by the aforementioned legendary Harvard head squash coach, Mike Way, former world number one and Drexel head coach Johnny White. Looking forward to having him back on the pod at some point as well, along with Gina Kennedy, Victor Quinn, and several other highly respected coaches will be there to lead the way. And don't forget about the early bird discount, but I think it might be a bit late. We're running into April. I think that discount expires on April 1st, but nonetheless, check out the camps and see which one fits your needs at www.opensquash.org. And then also, Open Squash is very excited to be partnering up with American squash court manufacturer Sunrise Courts. Jordan Aldrich and his team at Sunrise will be ready to help you with you and your squash court needs. If you have any questions, just check out the website at sunrise-courts.com and avail yourself of a free court setup estimate. That's sunrise-courts.com. Now, here we go, episode 293. I'm looking forward to this one for a while. Always enjoy chatting with Parky. Simon Park, former world number three, he's on the pod today. Wow. So Simon, great to have you back on. And just before we get into what I wanted to talk about, I think I mentioned to you earlier, but are you watching any of the London Squash Classic?
I have it here, right here, right now, actually.
There we go. Okay, yeah. Who's playing there?
Yeah. It's Shabagi and it's Marwan and Joel.
Oh, well, that'll be a cracker then. Is that
you don't have it on?
I don't. I should be multitasking right now.
Multitasking, yeah. I just literally turned it on 5 minutes ago. It's 1-1 and 5-4 to Macon.
Okay. Well, Macon's just, he's not going to go away, is he?
No, he's not. He never does.
It's amazing. Do you reckon he's the fittest guy on tour?
Along with Paul Cole, yeah. I mean, they're kind of like a different type of fitness a little bit. I think Joel has that kind of that real raw strength, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Almost like a rugby player. He's just a force of nature. Whereas Paul Colley's obviously incredibly fit as well, but he has that kind of agility, doesn't he? The
It's different, isn't it?
it's different, it's slightly different, the different kind of athletes, but both amazing in their different ways.
Absolutely. They both amaze me. And Joel just sort of, he's the kind of guy, he just never seems, regardless. So he won't, he's like a dog on a bone. I hate to say, put it that way, but never going to give up.
Absolutely. Never. Yeah, he never does. I mean, obviously, Marwan is the kind of player that is very tough to beat as well, but he's kind of more of a front runner, isn't he? He's he likes to dominate, and but he gets in some tough battles. This is looking pretty tough, this one.
Marwan's the kind of guy who's I mean he's very talented, fundamentally quite a bit different from his brother, but like he's the kind of guy who could also maybe get into Joel's head a bit.
He gets into a lot of people's heads, I think, Marwan. That's why I think the only nickname that I came up with was the Jackal. The Jackal for Marwan. And Joey
You came
O'Keefe.
up with that one, did you?
I came up with that one,
Oh,
yeah.
okay.
Yeah, I
I
actually
didn't
did.
know.
And you can check with Joey.
Well, he was just on the pod last week. I should have did you he was on. He was fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it yet. I saw on social media that it was on, so I'll give that a listen later today. But I saw a bit of your rundown of what he was talking about and stuff, and it looked interesting.
Well, I want to talk to you about Cleveland, because Cleveland, when we think of squash, obviously they've been, I think they've had a pro event for a number of years. But first of all, before we get into that event in particular, what was the setup like there? What's the squash community like in Cleveland? And have you ever played professionally there yourself?
I'll start with the last question. Yes, right at the back end of my career, Nathan Dugan. I don't know if aware of him. English player who went out to coach in Cleveland. He's still out in the States. I actually saw him there. He brought me over for an exhibition with Alex Goff. I think it was around 2006, 2007, which is the year I retired, 2006. So I played at the Cleveland, I think that was the Cleveland Rackets Club.
Isn't it
But there's
called the
also,
Cleveland Classic, something like that?
yeah, I mean, what we played was just an exhibition match at that time. But there used to be, there was the Cleveland Classic, and there's the Cleveland Skating Club. But there's a few English guys that are involved there. Darren Ramsey, who else was there? Joe Russell, who we saw. Yeah, it seems to be all English coaches basically
Wonder what.
dominating Cleveland.
Maybe they like their NFL football and NBA basketball, because there's plenty of that in
Yeah.
and baseball.
And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I visited when I was there.
Did
Me and
you?
Ashley went there.
Oh, that would a lot of Led Zeppelin around around that place, I would imagine.
There was, I mean, I like a bit of Led Zepp, but there was obviously the Beatles, the Stones, Elvis. There was the whole thing was just, I mean, it was six
Amazing. Yeah.
floors. It was amazing. It was amazing. But back to the squash, the theater district. It was in a small theater, and I didn't know this about Cleveland until I got there. But it's the second largest theater district after Broadway in the U.S.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah. So it had like interconnecting theaters, all of different sizes, and apparently it was all going to be knocked down. The wrecking ball was outside, ready to knock the whole place down. Until somebody, I'm not exactly sure of the name, but somebody stepped in and so we need to look after this place, and they did it and got it restored to its original glory. And they now, I mean, they had Funny Girl playing next door, and they obviously had the squash, and they have loads of things going on there. So it was pretty vibrant theatre district, and pretty interesting actually.
Yeah, amazing. Cleveland's a city. I've never been there, but I mean, I'm a huge sports fan, and they've got some of the great, the Browns are there, the Cavs, Cleveland, LeBron James's first team.
Okay.
And the Cleveland Indians, obviously a great baseball team. I'd love to and then of course the squash that's there. I'd love to experience that. But you were there for the was it the Squash in the Land? Is that the name of the sort of
Correct.
name they gave the
Correct.
event. Cool. And it just seemed like a great, I mean, just the way it all turned out. I mean, Noor El Tayeb, she, to me anyways, just, I love watching her play because she's probably, yeah, the most dynamic of the women's players. I mean, she can do any. She hits shots. She moves well. She's feisty. She's exciting, and she came out and won that event in very convincing style. Just wanted to ask you what you thought about her performance that week.
I mean, she's one of my favorite players of the last sort of 10, 15 years as well. You know, she's phenomenal. She's unique. I don't think anybody else really plays like her. There's a lot of feel and instinct to her game, which I like. And I like, I mean, Hamami and Gohar are obviously amazing and forces of nature, but it's a lot of fast hitting and fast, you know, good hitting, but fast pace. And that's how they beat people a lot with their athleticism as well and the fast pace. But with Gohar, she's obviously a great athlete, but it's about mixing up the pace and angles and using the height on the front wall and doing all sorts of creative things, as well as being really agile as well. Especially, you know, now being a mother as well, it's incredible to watch. And I did briefly chat to her at that event. And she said squash is so weird, right? Because she'd before Chicago, I think she trained incredibly hard, and then had, by her standards, a poor result. Even though Sobey, you know, Sabrina Sobey played incredibly well, didn't she?
She, Sabrina has that in her. She can beat some,
Yeah,
just some
she could
days
beat anyone.
anybody. Yeah. And then lose
Absolutely.
anybody. So.
She just needs to. She needs to get that consistency. The younger Sobey, but then Tayeb came out to Cleveland and she said she did 20 minutes solo in the previous week, and obviously she won the event. So it's difficult to gauge, but she's at that level now and she's so experienced, isn't she? So much talent that I guess she can, you know, she can call on her skills at any time, really. If she feels fit, she's going to have a great chance.
Yeah, I was going to ask, that just sort of came to mind. Like, did you ever have that experience? Like, I mean, you've got, given you've been playing a little bit, but if you didn't really take something as seriously as you might, you go into an event maybe a bit more relaxed.
No, I don't think I had quite the same talent as Noor,
Don't sell
unfortunately.
yourself short, man. Come on.
I think actually this is going back a long way, but when I won the nationals, I was pretty ill the week before, and it was touch and go when whether I was going to play or not. So I didn't really train that much. I just tried to just sort of lay low and get myself ready for the first round. And then I ended up recovering, not feeling great first round, but just gradually recovering and winning the event the only time I won it. So that's probably the best example I've got of not the best preparation, but I think sometimes maybe it relaxes you a little bit. And it stops you from overtraining, I guess, as well, and being maybe a little too tired during an event.
Cool. And then on the men's side, I get equally as impressive. Lionel Cardenas goes in there, beats Yan Yao, former world junior champion, world's number one seed, and then the third seed. This is all before the final. So we saw what he did last season. He kind of put his name on the map last year. He had a couple of good wins and good results. But you were there for this one. What do you think of his game and how impressive was he?
I'm very impressed with him. I think I don't know if you were watching the event, or maybe you had me on mute. I don't know, but
No.
I was comparing him a little bit to Berada, Ahmed Berada, who I used to play against back in the day. Just as it, there's not that many similarities in the game, but the way he looked, and I guess with the volleying and stuff, and just the physique,
It's a bigger
he,
built, like
yeah,
he's a big fella, I guess.
big
It's not
shoulders.
tall, but big, yeah.
Yeah, big shoulders, muscular, a bit like Berada was. And he's good. Yeah, I've seen him a few times before. Obviously, that bronze event gives those kind of players a little bit more of an opportunity to come through. I think he was sixth seed, wasn't he, in that event? And obviously, Bennett Jaume, you know, coming through unseeded. To meet him in the final, that was impressive. But Cardenas, yeah, he can. What's he up to now? Like 27, 30 or something like
He's
that.
top 30, I think. Yeah.
30, yeah.
Yeah.
So he could definitely get up into that top 20. He could cause people a few problems. He's a good mover, isn't he? He's really good, really smooth.
Yeah, he seems to have good skills, racket skills. He does things with the ball that are different, it seems sometimes.
Yeah, it must be that kind of South American thing. They're just a little, they're all a little bit different, aren't they? Those South American players.
Yeah.
When you look at Diego, compared to the cannonball, they're so different. They couldn't be more different, could they?
They couldn't be more different, but they're equally as impressive. I mean, Diego speaks for himself, but the cannonball, it just what he does with the ball and how he, some of the shots that he plays, it's amazing. Like what he can do.
Oh yeah, I mean, like when he checks the reflection, where and the back wall bows goes in, and he checks the reflection
Make
and then
sure his hair
volleys.
is looking good.
Exactly, checks the haircut first and then volleys the drop shot. He's so entertaining, but I mean, they all are. There's definitely something about the South American. There's got to be a style, some sort of signature style, and Cardenas, he's one to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Now I wanted to ask you about Optasia. I mean, I watched that event in full, and I just thought it was, the storyline there with Ali Farag and Paul Cole getting to the final, and just the way that whole match played out. Obviously, Cole won it, and it was really impressive. But to me, it just felt, I mean, it just added to just how impressive Ali has been this whole. Since he came back from his knee injury, just to go out there and play that way, to go up 2 love, and you could just see it wasn't gonna, you knew he was gonna end up losing it. You could just tell. But the fact that he went out there under those circumstances and played that well for the entire event, and then just to come up a little bit short there, how impressed were you with his performance that week, particularly given the circumstances there.
Just incredible, as always, as when he won the British Open, during Ramadan as well. It was, I don't know how he does it. I mean, we know as squash players how hard it is to play this game without any problems. Just being, I mean, obviously when you're a bit older, it gets more difficult. But playing during Ramadan and not having water when he needs it, and going through the whole day without the right food, it's just phenomenal, really. I mean, I was thinking that because I think he'd won 6 of the last 8 events. Is that right? Prior to that.
Something he yeah I mean he can been to the final in all of them, I think.
And if so, the only person he's lost to 3 times is Paul Cole, right? It was two before that, and then obviously he lost to him again. And I mean, Paul's there ready for him, isn't he? When he's got the fitness and he's ready and waiting. But both of them, I mean, Farag's efforts and Cole, just absolutely astonishing, really. But I think that Ali could, if the guys aren't careful, could dominate a little bit in the, when he's not on Ramadan in the next few months, because he's just looking so confident and so good. There's occasions when you're watching him, you think, how do you win a rally against this guy? Because I mean, it almost looks like he's playing racquetball out there and the other guys are playing squash. Because
Absolutely. Yeah, he's just on everything so early, isn't he?
And he sees the ball bigger as well than other people and earlier. When he's at his best, obviously he lost to Cole that time, but just recently there's been a bit of a step up, I think, with Farag.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, and not to take anything away from Cole, though. I mean, it was a great win, and you could almost tell there were periods where he kind of was second guessing himself almost at times. But have you ever been in that situation, like where an opponent you knew even before the match, like he was compromised, and you go out there and you kind of you know it's in the back of your mind, and then this guy's playing really well, and
There was a few times Jonathan Power a few times back in the day.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think it would work for him, and
Well, he would
sometimes it
play.
wouldn't.
He would play that up too, wouldn't he? Like,
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if you know Jonathan
go
at
into
all.
that if you don't mind.
Well, it actually worked in my the one I'm thinking of worked in my favor because it was the World Team Championships, I think, in about 97 something. Obviously, England, Canada, and I think it was the semi-finals, and I'd heard that he'd actually pulled a muscle whilst on the toilet. And couldn't, he
Nothing
needed help.
surprises me. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And he needed help getting off the toilet, all this. Anyway, I was like, well, he's probably going to recover because I've heard these stories before, the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah.
But he was actually terrible. He just couldn't move at all. I think I won. He finished the match because it was a team match. He would have retired in a PSA, but it was literally, I think I won for like 1 or 2 points. He just couldn't move. But on another occasion against David Palmer, I think in the TOC, I think I spoke to John White before that match, and he said, "Oh, who have you got?" I said, "Oh, Palmer," and he said, "Oh, you'll be fine. He's had no sleep. He's been sick all night." And I was like, "Yes, that's it. Yes,
Yeah.
that's in the bag."
Yeah.
And obviously he made a full recovery and beat me 3-love. So,
Well,
that.
a Marine is meant to be able to perform with no sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And he certainly did that, and I don't know what I was thinking, but it got in my head. And yeah, it just proves how psychological sport is, especially squash.
Yeah, definitely. It's a tricky one in those circumstances. Now I just wanted to ask you as well, just in terms of the Ramadan stuff. I asked Joey this as well, and he thought, I raised a good point. Why wouldn't they schedule these matches a little bit later? It just seemed like, and that was the final, right? It was at
Yeah.
6:30 or. I mean, when you see a lot of these events, particularly in Egypt, maybe because it's outdoors or whatever, but they seem to run well into the night, like until 10:30,
Sure.
some of these later matches. So it just seemed to me like why wouldn't they have scheduled the matches a bit later, just to, given the situation.
Yeah, just so we can make it even easier for all the top Egyptian players to win.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we have to take advantage of it. Yeah, I guess there is that. Yeah.
But I do agree with you. I think that could definitely be worked on. I think just to make the squash the bet, the two players, whoever the two players or the four players are in the finals, at their best, their very best, 100% against 100%. I think that would be a sensible option. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all also in terms of just the health, the health of the player as well.
Well, absolutely. When you looked at Farag after that second game, or during the second game, he looked a mess, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I think he was seeing double, triple, quadruple.
Yeah.
I mean, his eyes were wide open, weren't they? And he was all over the place.
It reminds me of one match I played where I didn't get any sleep either. So.
Right. But for different reasons.
Simon, I was just over the last couple of events, and you've probably noticed this. I didn't know. I'm not sure about what happened in Cleveland, but in terms of officiating, they've been sort of it seems to me like they've been trying to silence player. I wouldn't say silence might be a bit harsh, but silence them from going beyond the usual query that asking for a let. And then beyond that, it just seems like any questioning of the decision has been silenced. Now, as you know, I mean, playing against the likes of Power, Palmer, those guys, they like to banter a bit with the officials, and they
Banter.
never, yeah,
If
yeah.
you call it that, you can call it that.
But is there is that the right way to approach it, in your estimation, or is there do we need some wiggle room there?
I personally would like to see a little bit of wiggle room, but Alex Goff and Lee Beachel are friends of mine, and they probably say, with all the different personalities that you get on the tour, it's a little difficult to have that in black and white with wiggle room. And I guess the referees need a line that they're going to keep using. But if I was a referee, I guess it's up to the personalities of the referees a little bit as well. I think it's good that we are being stricter. But I wouldn't like to see the personalities of the players completely erased. And I'm not sure how we do that, but you want to see a smile, you want to see a joke every now and again. So again, it's still up to the referee, a good referee, to control the match as best they can.
I would argue that, as long as the player isn't being disrespectful, and that comes into play, with tone of voice, with, shouting and, things like that. You can crack a joke here and there, but as long as you're not being disrespectful, then I think it should be okay. But then also not elongating the query as well, stuff like that. Because I think there was a period there for, the last 3, 4 years where things had gotten out of control. So I think they're right in kind of addressing it, but I think they don't want to go too far with it.
Yeah, I think and I think I agree with you with the respect thing, and I think that's very important, the way that you talk to the referee and the way the referee talks to the player. I think that's important as well. And some do it better than others. I think some are a little too officious, and then it gets the backup of the player. Because remember, I sympathize with the players. It's the heart rate is 180 sometimes, and they're the guy or the girl that's running around and trying the heart out, and I know the referee's in the hot seat, but they're sat still with the heart rate a little bit lower, let's say. So there has to be that better understanding. But like you say, it could still be respectful. But if they ask one question, the player, and then another, it needs to be nipped in the bud, doesn't it? After the one question, I think.
I agree. I agree. I think they're doing, their heart's in the right place. They're doing the right thing. I guess it's the WSO or Lee Drew, those guys. Hopefully they, they get it right, and by the time the Olympics come around, because we want to have our best game out there.
Absolutely. That's the most important thing, that everyone's proud of the game, by that point, and everyone's behaving themselves, basically.
Because the game speaks for itself. I mean, you get so many talented athletes and talented squash players, it's going to speak for itself. So if we can, address, that sometimes it can get a bit ugly when players start berating officials, and if we can deal with that, then I think we're in a good spot.
Absolutely. I mean, you can sometimes players, it's the dissent thing, isn't it? You can really tell when a player is, giving dissent to the referee, and that definitely needs to be nipped in the bud, I think.
If it's like a one-off kind of thing, or it happens here and there, then that's kind of exciting. But if it's happening in every match and after every call, then that's not good. But I wanted to get your thoughts as well on Mustafa Assal. I mean, he's obviously I wouldn't say he's as polarizing as he was. I think that's a lot of credit to him, a lot of credit to James Willstrup and the PSA or whatever they've done to help Mustafa. But at the same time, just from my eyes, he's made definite progress in terms of the areas that they wanted him to deal with, the movement stuff and the on-court maybe temperament, I guess. He's not so ill-tempered with officials, but some of the stuff that he was doing against his opponents, could have been a bit better, but he seems to have lost his edge out there a little bit. And at the obviously he's improved in his movement and things like that, but his game it has hasn't it's not what it was. So is this just a matter of time for him, or is part of Mustafa's game is that fiery, the way he moves around the court and the way he, the intensity with which he plays. So, what are your thoughts on the current situation with him?
Well, I'll be honest, I wasn't a fan in the early days. I'm not into that kind of, football style of play and celebrations and, a little bit of cheating here and there and physical contact that's not necessary and stuff like that. And a lot of people were putting it down to him being young. Obviously he dominated the juniors. I commentated on him a couple of times, the British Junior Opens and things like that. And as lovely as he was off the court and still is, I just wasn't a fan. But I agree with what you're saying about the changes. And I'm now becoming a fan because he's really he's James Wilstrop's doing a great job with him, and he's listening. He's obviously listening. Maybe he's not picking up the trophies like he used to, but I think he'll get there. And he's been still, he's obviously still in the later rounds, isn't he? He's still a contender, very much so. But I almost feel quite proud of him, even though I don't know him that well, just because he's really trying. And everyone likes to see that. Everyone likes to see somebody who admits their mistakes and then tries to learn from them. At the end of the day, he is young, and I think squash is all he knows. Squash, and I believe he loves football as well, which is quite obvious.
I thought that was I wrote that down here. Just you made a sort of connection between the cheating and football that we don't want to see. And I never really thought of it that way. But the time when he grabbed Mezen's hand, a wrist or whatever when he was going through, and how many other times had he done that? Probably a few times. We just never really kept an eye on it. And that's a football move, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I, at times we used to say, how does he even do it? How does he play so well, even win a tournament and play unbelievable squash and manage to get a little toe tap in there and know where his opponent is as he's playing the ball? And you mentioned the arm grab with Hesham. It's actually like an extra little talent, isn't it, on top of his squash abilities. I couldn't do that. I would never have the foresight or the peripheral vision to do that, or even think about doing it. Jonathan Power may have done back in the day, but
He accused, I remember this, he accused Nick Matthew of a sweat ball. Do you remember that one? I forget what
yeah, I think
US
so.
Open. Yeah, he was saying that he had done it.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. But I think yeah, he's definitely learning a style, and I'm enjoying seeing the new version of him. And what is he, 20, what, 22, 20?
22, he's got a lot of years left.
Yeah,
I think
he's
what
been
Joey
spending.
said was that he'd like to see us all get a bit fitter because he actually does look bigger now. It looks like maybe he's put on a little bit of weight. Maybe he needs to, get out there and have Jonah put him through some paces, with the a few more court sprints, some old school court sprints.
That could definitely work, or get him in his back garden there near Glastonbury and getting him doing some circuits like he used to get us doing in the summer.
Were you part of that in the back
I
garden?
was, I
Yeah,
was.
what was that like, man?
Intense. But it's quite funny as well, because we were all kind of just in our shorts in the summer, kind of doing, there'd be a chair there, then there'd be a few weights there and a little maybe mini court where cones where you'd go to and stuff like that. And there'd be dogs everywhere and kids. Well, Joey was a kid back then, so kids running around, and myself and maybe Peter Marshall doing all this training in Jonah Barrington's back garden whilst he was joining in. So it was pretty special memories.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love those stories. Joey talks about PJ and him doing the same thing, but in their tidy whiteies,
Another memory I've got is of Joey when he was a very good cricketer, and he was I think he was about 11 or 12, and he said, oh, to me and Peter Marshall, can I practice some bowling at you? And we're like, yeah, okay. And we weren't cricketers, but obviously we can hit a ball. but we didn't have helmets on or anything, and he just took his first ball and went straight for my head as fast as hard as he could. And I just got out of the way, and I could just hear Jonah calling from the house, "Joey, don't you injure my players."
That's
He's
classic.
like, I'm not, it's fine, it's fine. And then I don't think Peter Marshall went for the second ball. He just ran off and
Did some more court sprints there.
exactly. Yeah, that was less painful.
Well, Simon, did I leave anything out there? Anything you want to add? You got anything going on? Maybe some squash camps or some anything squash related you got going on yourself
Well, I've
these
got,
days?
yeah, I've got, well, I've got some commentary coming up.
Have you?
I'm not obviously not down at the London Classic this week, but I'm watching. Well, I have it on right now, actually.
How's that match going, by the way?
Well, Joel Makin managed to come through against Marwan in
Okay.
three.
Okay. Yeah, that's not, I'm not surprised by that. That's what I would have expected.
And the current match is Shabini and Subramanian.
Supermanian.
Subramanium is this is good little section for your podcast, isn't it? Live updates. Subramanium
She's
eight
feisty,
six up. Yeah, she's eight six up in
she's up.
Shabini.
Okay. Yeah, Shabine, you'll find her way.
Probably. So next week I have Hamburg, which is a new event.
Okay.
And I think I'm gonna be with Natalie Grinham, which is a new
Oh, nice.
new team up. So that'll be cool.
Yeah.
And then the following week, I'm actually doing blackball for the first time, so that'll be fun.
All good. So you're heading out to Cairo, or are you? Or
Yeah, heading out to Cairo. Yeah, that's gonna be not a
nice.
remote event, so that'll be great.
That's
Yeah.
great. Yeah. Oh, enjoy that. Is that going to be outdoor, an outdoor event, or the black?
No, I think that's
Indoor
usually
indoors.
indoor. Yeah, blackball. Yeah,
Okay.
yeah.
All right. Well, Simon, we got to do this again soon. We won't leave it a couple of years, as long as you don't mind.
Absolutely, yeah. I've had a great time. I'd love to come back.
Yeah, perfect. And have enjoy Cairo, and I hope your wife plays well today.
Yeah, thank you very much. See you, Jerry.